Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from BreezeLine. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at BreezeLine.com.
Legend has it, underneath the NJM insurance offices lies a mysterious room of long-forgotten, moldy mascot memorabilia, often pitched by ad agencies, always rejected by NJM. Is it real? We may never know. But what is real is NJM's dedication to doing what's right for their customers. Astoundingly, they're proud to put policyholders first. No jingles or mascots, just great insurance. Learn more at NJM.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, are you talking to me or the audience?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm staring at a wall and talking. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Sweeney.
My name's Mike Sweeney.
I'm Jesse Gaskell.
And we're writers on The Conan Show, and this is Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. And we are talking about things that happen here at The Conan Show, and oftentimes things that don't happen at The Conan Show.
We're both... We're a little strung out right now.
We're a little strung out. We were in Greenland.
We were in Greenland,
weekend trip.
Just a getaway.
Exploring whether it's a good weekend place to have a
jaunt.
House.
Yeah.
We were there for only 2.5 days. We came back.
We left on Wednesday night of last week, and we got back Saturday night.
Right.
And Sunday we came in to start editing Conan in Greenland.
We've been editing it. Every day around the clock to get it down to an hour special that we're screening for an audience tomorrow.
Yeah.
So there's no place to hide.
Yeah.
I have to get it done.
So. It has to be done.
Yeah. We're blithering.
Or I have to leave the country and move to Greenland.
That's right.
Where no one will find me. That was an exciting trip. We'll talk about the trip next week.
Right. We're going to do a show about the Greenland show.
So don't nary you worry.
Yes. Well, everything that is Greenland will be discussed.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of fans in Greenland.
But I will explain. We'll apologize in advance for being a little tired, a little tie-tie.
We'll work through it.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah.
Especially because we're interviewing somebody exciting.
Very exciting. We have a great, great first guest on today's show.
Yeah. She works in the costume department here at Conan.
Yes.
And has a storied career in Hollywood.
We were tipped off about it by Scott Cronick, our head of wardrobe, who told us.
Yes, the head tie investigator.
Yes, about what an illustrious career our first guest has had.
Yeah. And without further ado, let's introduce Linda. Help me with your last name.
Sirimbali.
Sirimbali.
Oh, God.
I was going to give it a Chirimbali.
I'm such a coward. Okay. I was like, I'm not attempting that surname. Hi, Linda.
Hello. How
Welcome.
Are you today?
Good.
It's good to be here.
Thank you.
Linda, you came in your work smock. And it is, I love that it has a big glittery pocket on it. Did you design this?
Yeah, actually. And this is Scott's barbecue fabric.
Scott, our wardrobe.
Wait, Scott, our wardrobe.
What is barbecue fabric?
Oh, I made a cover for, orange is his color. Everybody in the department, Bruce was pink, Scott's orange, and I'm green or purple.
Oh.
So Scott got a big barbecue at his last house, and I made a big pig placket on the front of his barbecue cover and some pig serving plates.
Oh, that's great.
Sparkly orange.
So when you do wardrobe, is that a normal thing? Like everyone knows each other's favorite color?
Kind of, yes.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah.
One's asked me that since fifth grade.
What if somebody has the same color as someone who already works there? They don't get hired?
You get to pick another color.
Oh.
It's like baseball players with numbers that are already taken. So what's yours? Blue. You have two.
I have two. Green and purple.
All right.
Cool.
All primary colors?
No.
Oh, no, not purple.
Not even close.
Secondary colors.
Yes. Green's not a primary color either.
Oh, it's not. Oh, you make it from yellow and blue.
Secondary.
Mm-hmm. Linda, how long have you been working for Conan?
I worked on the Universal lot for the Tonight Show originally, and then I've been on this show since before the show started.
Wow. Okay, great. Do you have any memories that stick out the most, like the most challenging job you had to tackle here?
For this one? Oh, I don't know. Pick one. There's been a lot of them. Mostly it's the time frame that we get to do something, which is usually something that might take 2 months at another shop. We get a day and a half.
Oh my God.
Or 2 days to do. But, you know, the good thing is that you don't have to do it forever. It's a really short period of time and
right.
It's done.
And then you have 2 free months.
No, 2 free minutes.
Or we ask for more ridiculous things.
So, but I mean, I like it. I like the challenge. I like that you have to think spatially. I don't get time to make patterns. I basically just have to cut the foam and stick it together and do the whole 3D in my head, and measurements. Sometimes I build it in a little bit of cardboard for Scott to say, yeah, that works, or make this bigger, make that smaller, and then just do it. So
you eliminate all these steps. But because of all your experience, you can just picture it in your head.
Spoiled for life. I never can go back to couture. Some hot gluing thing.
Right.
Not with that barbecue apron. You will not be going back to couture with that.
Well, and you guys get especially slammed around times like Comic-Con, where we have, we'll have 20 costume orders.
Yeah, so we're working hard. We have like maybe worked 21 days straight up before we actually leave for Comic-Con.
Oh, wow.
So we've had the last 4 Fourth of July's, we've had barbecue in the green room.
Oh, no.
Really?
Yes.
But that's a fire hazard.
No, we bring it in, but that's been our 4th of July because we've been here working every 4th of July.
Oh, boy.
But no, it's okay. No hosting, no cleanup, just throw it on the trash.
I'm going to start coming to this barbecue.
Yeah.
So we go down to Comic-Con and we're already mindless on our last brain cell.
Wow.
And then we're done at Comic-Con. But this year was actually the easiest one we've ever had. And we found a bathroom in the garage that didn't smell bad.
Oh.
Things are looking up.
Yes.
It only took 4 years. Wow. In the garage.
What a treat
really
for you. Yeah.
Great. Well, there are a lot of perks with the job. I remember 2 years ago, maybe, its character we did a few times, but there was a new iteration of it. It was Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, you're giving me the sign of the devil.
Yes.
And
with incredibly long arms
exactly.
and legs. Yeah.
The legs.
He keeps getting bigger every year.
He does. Right.
More fantastic every year.
I think this year they pitched that he was on the outside of the building with legs going all the way from the top of the building to the ground.
Yeah, the legs and arms are like 40 feet long. Like, yeah. I don't think people...
And we had to tether everybody, get safety harnesses and tether people to the roof, I think was what the final broke the thing that it didn't happen.
Right.
Because we couldn't lose our customers before we even did our first show for falling off the roof.
That was the problem.
That was the problem. That's why I didn't go down the show.
As an issue.
Yeah.
There might be some OSHA violations in there, but... wow. Okay.
So where do you even start laying out foam for something like that?
Well, luckily Scott, I've worked for a lot of designers. Scott knows what he wants, and it's not like a lot of designers, you got to give him 99 things before they see the one thing, and they'll say, that's what I had in mind. But Scott knows what he wants, and Elizabeth does fabulous illustrations, and when I get the picture, I know what they want, right? So it's easy to just take that and work with it.
So Scott comes up with a concept. He describes it to Elizabeth.
And she does fabulous Photoshop drawings.
They're incredible drawings.
Yeah.
And then do you give feedback on those? And then is that when you see them?
When I first get them, we have a meeting and I give them a supply list. I write them a supply list for everything. And then I go and see this. We have this. We don't have that, but
right.
We need this. And so then they bring that stuff to me and I start making patterns.
Wow. And do you ever go, oh, I can't. No, this is.
That's not an option.
I just like to hear it. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and then you're literally super gluing stuff together a lot of times.
Super glue, hot glue. Some of it's tape, some of it's wire, some of it's zip ties. I know. It's like down and dirty, but you know, it's
only has to stay together for a few minutes. Yeah.
Then a writer comes in and goes, "That's not what I was thinking of."
Well, yeah. How often are there creative differences where, I don't know.
Not really. Not our department's pretty cohesive.
Yeah.
You know, as long as we know what it's supposed to do, then, you know, we know what needs to be strong or it doesn't matter. Or, you know, I know that Conan doesn't like water on the stage, so we try to make sure that whatever we do.
He's like a cat.
It has to all be very well sealed.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back to the time on The Tonight Show where he was running into the studio. It was a mock race with Terry Hatcher and the live part. They came running down the steps and there was a big debate. Do we wet them down to match the pre-tape because they're soaking wet in the pre-tape? It's like, oh, yeah, wet them down and match them. And what's the downside?
I think we know where this is going.
Yes. He was concussed.
Oh.
it was rough.
Was that actually on the air?
No.
And ooh, scraps.
I mean, he was fine by later that night, but at the moment, it was a little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another segment that puts a lot of strain on the costume department is mascots that shouldn't dunk.
We actually like them.
You like those?
I mean, the time frame is a little difficult sometimes.
And, yeah, because we'll send it out and then we want 12 costumes made and they're all like super elaborate. It'll be like a chest of IKEA drawers that's falling apart.
Right.
With clothes falling out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll be a lot of times we'll ask for something that is intentionally supposed to fall apart during their run up to the dunk.
Well, some of the hardest things we have are they defies physics. Like, it's one person here, and there's 6 feet of stuff to the left and nothing to the right, and it doesn't fit in the space that we had. We have more space now, but before we didn't have very much space to get the costumes in and turned around.
You mean backstage?
Yeah.
To position them and get them
so
ready to go.
So there would be things bigger than what fit into the entryway to the stage.
Are you saying writers don't have good spatial awareness?
Well, now we've got a big old ramp, so we can have the biggest thing you want on that stage now.
Oh, and well, good to know.
That's right when we stopped
I
doing
I know, we did stop doing
mascots
them.
I can't dunk. Perfect synergy. That's great. And I'm just curious to talk to you about you're kind of famous for your
yes.
Everybody, your email you send out to the entire staff.
Yeah,
occasionally.
You are one of the only people that sends these company-wide emails.
Yes, and it's to sell eggs.
To sell eggs.
Yeah, look here. See, my chickens buy me lunch every day.
Wait, and I want to know because I don't. So did I end up getting unsubscribed from the list?
No, we're underground now.
Oh,
because
I would like eggs still.
Okay, well then, just email me.
Why were your egg email? They were driven underground.
No, I just have a bunch of clients that always come and catch me in the hallway. So that's sort of my
wow. Now these are people who are too lazy to go to a store.
No, they're really good eggs.
They're special
eggs, organic, free range, and they're massive. They're blue and green and pink.
Wow.
How many chickens do you have?
I have 13 chickens, 9 full size and 3 bantam.
And how many eggs do they lay?
Depends
every day
on the season, but I can get a dozen eggs a day.
Wow.
A dozen eggs a day.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you
That's
been
awesome.
Cultivating these eggs?
Since before I came back down here. When I started the show, I lived in Ojai. I had a mountaintop in Ojai.
Oh, you commuted from Ojai?
I know, 87 miles one way.
But
I wanted to wait to see if the job would stick before I'd move back into the Los Angeles
orbit. Wait, was that for The Tonight Show?
Well, I worked for The Tonight Show for a while, and then it was mostly alterations, which was like I'd rather stab an ice pick in my ear than do alterations on a daily basis. So I found a person for Bruce and Scott and those guys.
You knew to stay on the mountain during The Tonight Show.
Well, I was going to say she stayed there even for the beginning of the TBS show.
Well, it took a while. And I was like, okay, this is going to go. So I decided, and then I sold that ranch, and then I bought another ranch that's in Altadena up in the National Forest.
I love Altadena.
Oh, wow. well.
So what else do you have on your ranch?
I have about 25 goats, an alpaca.
Oh, my God.
And meat rabbits and quail.
Meat rabbits?
Yeah.
So rabbits raised for consumption.
Correct.
Yeah. And who do you sell those to? Is that another underground thing?
Well, kind of. I have a bunch of clients that, it's weird. I have like religious heads that come to me to buy things. So, and then I have people who are cancer patients that come and buy raw milk from me.
Oh, yeah.
So they're in chemo and they take the raw organic stuff is better for them health-wise.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of clients that are that sort of way. I trade a lot of people come and shovel goat poop out of my pen and bring me produce for it.
Wow.
And it was better than turning water to wine.
So
honestly, when the apocalypse comes, I'm coming to your ranch. So, is that okay?
Do you have old wardrobe, like costumes lying around the ranch?
No, I don't do anything unless it's sold already. I can't say this. I'll get in trouble.
Oh.
Well, we're not recording any.
I have a Batwoman costume from the original.
Oh, cool.
Really?
Yeah, a Batgirl.
Wow.
From the ABC TV show.
No, from the movie.
Oh, from the movie. Okay.
That's great.
Wow.
Alicia Silverstone.
That's amazing.
Amazing. How cool.
So you're not supposed to have it, so you don't even talk about it?
Yes. I just wear it at Halloween.
Oh, it fits? Oh, that's great. I would wear it all the time, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every night when I get home.
The heels this high and their thigh boots.
Is it like pleather or what's the...
It's like a neoprene. Some of it's this really like 1 mil neoprene most of the body.
So it really sucks you in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Then this is like corset fabric, and then it has a leather corset that cranks up.
Oh, amazing.
How long does that take to slink into?
It takes about a half hour and you have to
it's
have
like
somebody else.
Yeah.
Because you can't get the corset in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It do you ever just people.
Slink, walk around the ranch playing Catwoman?
No, sorry. Don't do that.
Okay. It's Batwoman.
Oh, Batwoman. I'm sorry.
I've been out there with a chainsaw and pearls, but I really
I do want to ask you one question before we go to, because I think we should talk about your other movies that you've worked on. Have you ever been approached by a family of young hippies to live on your ranch? Like the Manson family?
No. I have two Airbnb apartments.
Oh, okay.
And the one is in the barn. I have a barn. It's a 5-horse barn, and I turned one end of it into an apartment. And I just got a call from Spain from Airbnb that they want me to cultivate doing a weekend experience where people come and stay.
Oh, yeah.
And then they learn how to like milk goats and then make cheese. And
I love
that's part of what
you raise on a ranch now are vacation rentals.
Well,
it's fantastic.
And
it's
would the Batgirl costume be included in the weekend experience?
Maybe.
Okay.
A private show.
A real Hollywood ranch.
So, yeah, we can teach people how to make bread, yogurt, milk, cheese. I brew beer.
Oh, cool.
Wine.
How's your beer and wine?
It's pretty good.
Taste good.
It's pretty good.
Wow. I got it.
We have to get on
your
list.
I need to get on this list. I know.
Meat rabbits? Sign me up.
I built this poultry pen back behind the barn. I had to build it like bulletproof because we have bear, mountain lion, rattlesnakes up there. So bears, I had to be.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you're like basically a bear buffet up there.
500-pound bear can sit on top of the poultry pen and not kill, you know. So, but I want to, maybe when I retire or maybe a little before, emus and ostrich.
Yeah.
Because the eggs are like $100 a piece.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, and they lay 300 a year.
That's a cash cow.
That's what I'm thinking. Cash cow
that
can kick you in the head.
Oh, my God.
Why are you working? Cool. It's still working here. What's wrong with you?
You could retire on these eggs.
You could buy the show with egg money.
Well, it's about 50-50 right now. So
yeah.
I've got two and a half more years till I retire. And I've sort of said with Scott, if it goes beyond, I'll come in and do the costumes because I love the mind, you know, the mind challenge of it.
The 3D-ness of it.
Yes. Yeah. All of it. You know, it just keeps you from getting old in the head.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can make costumes for your emus.
We had some of that. Where was it, in New York or something? They made lingerie for an ostriches.
That rings a bell. I mean, there was an ostrich character way back on Late Night.
And it tried to kick Scott, I think he said.
Oh, wow.
You mean the person inside the costume?
No,
that's a real ostrich.
Oh, a real one.
Yes. Jeez. And the costume came back. The ostrich made a mess all over the G-string, and it came back with a little tag that says, file this in the shit-stained ostrich costume section.
But you didn't keep that one.
No.
You didn't keep
just
the
label.
G-string. Yeah.
So this is just a warm-up for you. You have an incredible, well, you mentioned the Batgirl costume.
Yeah.
You've worked on an incredible number of films as well as television shows,
it's
right?
True. Yeah. Mostly film for a very long time. Last thing I did was G.I. Joe in Prague before I came back to the show, and that was right when Bruce was looking for someone to help with this show, and I said, sure, why not?
And that was in Prague.
Yeah, we shot Prague for Paris, the whole,
right. Mm-hmm.
The car chase scene and all that stuff.
Albuquerque is a stand-in for L.A. sometimes.
It was wonderful. Ugh, the restaurants and stuff there, you know, that you can go and have a beer in a place where people have been drinking for 1,200 years.
Right.
Like
under the ground, three stories. It's an amazing place. Yeah. So
that's great.
Yeah. So that was interesting. I think the first really big one I worked on was Hook.
Oh, yeah.
And I did the stuff for the
beautiful
pirates.
Beautiful costumes. Yeah.
That was a crazy thing. We actually were working. They moved us around a lot. It was on Columbia at that time.
Okay.
And we were on the soundstage where the poppy fields were for The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And so we were on one side making all the, I did the Lost Boys costumes, all the coconut stuff and all that.
Wow.
Awesome.
And then on the other side of the stage were all the sailmakers. They brought in all these drunken old sailmakers were making all the rigging for the ships, for the pirate ships.
Wait,
they got old sailors to make
the
sails?
Yeah, they were out there with these sewing machines making the sails for it.
That's so authentic.
So we were there for a while, and then I guess we had to move from that stage onto another one, and then it was like a setup similar to what we have to Baba Yaga huts up on stilts, you know, with a little boardwalk in between that we were working on the set.
Wait, Baba Yaga hut? What is?
I'm glad you
what's
asked.
That reference?
It's an old Russian thing. It's a woman lived in a hut that was on two bird legs, like stilts.
Cool.
It was like kind of like moved around a little bit.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, we were on set sewing with all that stuff, but we had to do, then there was like six months of filming. And they took the soundstage where they had done the Esther Williams underwater, you know, like all those movies, right? So it had a big pool underneath. So that's where they built the whole pirate ship thing.
The lagoon.
Yeah. Well, there was two of them. So this was when the ships, the back end of the ship and sort of like a lot of like the ship stuff there. There was another one that was more the village. And so they would go in at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they used all these Vietnam War vets that had real legs missing and things like that. And you'd go in the fog and the mist because it was over like by the marina, and they were like all of these guys like laying against the wall waiting to get dressed, and they'd get all dressed and go in there, and they put them on the boats and then not let them off for hours and hours. So
how can you get off?
Peeing into the water. It was like, oh my goodness, it got a little rough there by the end of the time.
For 6 months? No wonder the sailors were drunk. This is a Robert Altman film, right? And who is that? Did you ever work on another film with him? Because
Steven Spielberg was the director.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm totally wrong. Oh, this is Hook.
Hook.
Well, I'm thinking of Popeye.
This is Hook. So, but like the pirate guys would get together and they would steal or commandeer the little golf carts on the lot, and they would go arr, and drive up and down the streets, and then they would just grab women off the streets and pull them under the carts and kidnap them.
They were really plundering.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They were in character. They wanted to stay in character.
They were. And so wardrobe always would come in. We had to wait to get everybody's costumes. That's where the last ones to go to the commissary, and there was no food left ever, because they would eat everything. So I was like, and then so because there were so many people, the craft service was awful. And because they would come and like just put things in their pockets.
Yeah, they're hungry. So,
that's when you started raising
hungry
eggs.
Pirates.
So they were gonna have to feed myself.
Pots of hot dogs that had been on this whatever cot plate for so long that they had split from both ends and curled back on themselves. So that was, and then there was another thing where they had a microwave where they like let you cook a potato and then you put it in the microwave and come back. That, you know, because this is like a long time ago, the microwave took like 15 minutes to cook a potato. Right. You come back, somebody already stolen it. So the and then there were eggs, pickled eggs with like the scum on top. So we was like, okay, we can't do this. So we'd order pizzas out and. The pizza guy, well, this is before 9/11, so the pizza guy could actually come to the soundstage and deliver. And you would have to
You're
pay.
You're touching all the bases.
We always end up at 9/11.
It always comes back to that.
Well, we had to pay the guards, like, when you order a pizza, because if the pizza would come, anybody else would go and take it and pay for it and buy it. So,
oh, wow.
So you would have to pay the guard so that when the pizza came that you would actually get the pizza.
Wow. Those pirates, they were grabbing women, stealing
pizzas. It was
Hooking
really
pizzas.
Pretty funny.
Wow.
I can't believe you haven't written a behind-the-scenes expose of Hook yet. You've got the secrets.
You were there for 6 months.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It was pretty wild.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was good. That was like my first major film.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's amazing.
How fun.
And then the guy that I worked with on that was the one that went and did the Ted Shell. He's passed since, but he was a force of nature. He was 6'5", with dyed red hair, cut in shingles, and fake acrylic nails, long fake acrylic nails. He was quite a sight, right? And he would like wear dashikis to work because he was, you know, huge, 350 or something like that.
Oh.
I mean, that seems pretty common for a costume department person, right?
So I started working with Ted, and he's the one that took me to the first Batman, the Michael Keaton Catwoman movie.
The best Batman.
And we did all the hats for the party scene for that movie.
Oh,
in
cool.
the original Batman?
Yeah, in the original. Well, was it the one? It was Catwoman.
It was Batman.
Because the first
Returns,
one they did
right. was that
the first one they did in England at Pinewood Studios, and then this right. one they did here, and then
this was one with the Penguin too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And where the costume, whatever the costume museum on the lot here is,
uh-huh.
that's where our shop was on the second story up there.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
And the downstairs was just this, I don't know, where they would store things, a big empty thing.
And that's where your Batwoman costume should be.
Well, we came in the morning, like 5 o'clock in the morning, and there were cats and coyotes were running around on the lot. And I remember one time I was trying to go and unlock the door, and there was this raccoon just standing there hissing at me on the lot.
Oh, wow. I've seen raccoons on this lot.
Yeah,
they live in the sets.
They do.
Yeah.
In the rafters.
And it was get to be like as soon as it hit 101 degrees in our shop, because we had windows we could open, but no air conditioning or anything. And Ted Shell would say, we would stand there, you were like white socks on and sweat just run down your legs and it'd fill up your socks. So he said, whenever it hit 101 degrees, we would go to this theater in, what's the big Hollywood theater? El Capitan.
Yeah.
And watch Fantasia. And Ted would just like lay on the cement of the floor in the studio. In the theater and fall asleep.
Wow.
Wow, you
well,
guys know
horrible
how to party.
Conditions. Let's see. Smelly toilets in the garage.
That's
yeah.
wardrobe.
Curled up hot dogs.
Sweat filling your socks.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a sweatshop. You guys
it
know?
Was definitely a sweatshop there.
No
but
food.
I mean it was fun. You know, we would do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. Do you ever do like would you be right there to do repairs during
oh,
the shooting
yeah.
like oh, hold up, we have a bustier breaking open.
Oh, it's all the time. So on the other one, that was the first Batman movie I did.
Yeah.
And the next ones I went to, I actually ran the shop for making the suits for the Batman, the Robin, the Batgirl,
awesome.
And all that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah, I saw on IMDb your credit is listed as Bat Shop.
Yeah.
So you were in the Bat Shop.
I interfaced with the mold department and the casting and all that stuff, the foam running.
Pouring molds, not the spores, right?
Yes, the pouring molds. And because we had some of the ovens were the size of this room, like big enough to drive a Volkswagen
in,
where we would put the molds for the
And what is
the
it
foam.
Actually made? What do you pour in there?
Foam latex.
Oh, cool.
So it was about a 3-month process. We'd do a body cast of the person.
Yeah.
And then Jose, the guy that did the suit.
The Conan's superhero suit.
He would do all the sculpting of the muscles on top of the bodysuit, the body form. And then they'd make a mold of that. and then do an injection into the space and then have to put it in and cook it. So
were these custom built?
And how do they do the nipples?
That was a Joel Schumacher thing.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, there was a big deal about whether that was going to happen or not happen. And was it going to be on Batgirl?
So, right.
So, yeah.
Luckily.
Yes. Bob Ringwood, he and Joel just spat all the time. And Bob knew that Joel didn't like the smell of popcorn.
What? Who doesn't like the smell of popcorn?
Who's Joel?
Joel Schumacher?
Oh, no. But who's the other one?
Bob Ringwood was the designer that did all the best. Ringwood. He's an English. So he would make sure that popcorn was being popped in the shop anytime that Joel would come over.
Very subtle.
Very subtle. So, I mean, it was interesting. Warner Brothers at that time used to have two buildings that were right across from the airport where they had, one was a design shop where they had made all the tailoring stuff like the, you know, the Joker costumes or the Riddler costumes. And then across the street was where they did all the foam and molding. And I don't know if it's still there, if they still have it, right. But we did like movie after movie after movie there for a long time.
And they had these.
Yeah, but once you have these latex ovens,
yes, exactly.
You might as well.
It's hard to switch to being a pizzeria.
And we used to make like 100 bat suits to get through a movie. So you would have, some of them were like driving costumes, were just from the waist up. And then we would take a drill and core out a bunch of holes in the back
so that
it wouldn't be so hot. I mean, all the actors, any actor who's ever been in a bat thinks it's a great idea when they first start. And then after they wear the costume like one or twice, they're like,
yeah.
They don't really like it. Oh. Michael Keaton didn't like that they just pulled the hair plugs out. And,
yay!
and Val Kilmer hated wearing it so much that his stunt double actually got the mouth down and was actually at some point even doing lines.
Oh my God.
Wow. So, I was wondering about
anytime
that. You could walk off
the acting is good. It's actually the double.
Uh-huh. So we had a lot of different actors that would do different things, like acrobatic tumbling, flying, just plain stunts, or kick fighting.
So they all had their own
costumes. They all had their own costumes. And plus they all just sort of break down. And I know that that's been happening a little bit with the Conan thing. And he was thinking, because it was getting tight on him, and that's what happens. It's just like an old rubber band. They get tight.
Oh,
they stop stretching.
That's what you told him.
Yeah. No, but it is true. It's true. They get stiff. So you have to turn them over all the time.
Oh my gosh. Well, you have to wear it like you do. You have to wear the costume.
You have to wear it all the time.
To make sure it doesn't shrink, yeah.
So, or you store it in a moist, dark area.
A cave. That's why.
There you go, the cave. Yeah. There you have it.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, that's all fantastic.
I think we have to leave it at just talking about the Batman movies you worked
know.
On.
Well, you also worked on Waterworld. I saw that.
Waterworld. I worked on Waterworld and Postman. So I was down on a Kevin Costner phase.
Kevin Costner phase.
Yes.
Ooh, you've probably touched the butts of a number of Hollywood leading men.
I guess.
Is that right?
Call that just about any movie with a man in it. Yeah.
Yeah, you really get up in
Demolition
there.
Demolition Man, Batman.
Oh my god.
Superman. Gosh. I was in Australia for a year on the Brendan Routh Superman.
Okay.
A year.
Yeah, a year in Sydney on the pier at Woolloomooloo at the W.
Okay. Wow. I like that one. Wow. So
what a way to see the warehouses of the world.
Yes. Well, actually, that was nice because the studio there used to be the fairgrounds, and the one in Australia Fox studio used to be the fairgrounds. Uh-huh. So we were in the cow barn when we were doing the show over there, the Superman, and they only had one building that was big enough to do the flying stuff because you have to get, put the ram outside the building to get the speed going fast enough and then you have enough room to stop before you slam the actor into the wall on the other side.
Yeah.
So
I'm exhausted now
just
probably don't even
hearing you describe all
do any of
shots.
That anymore, right? It's all just
well, a lot of CGI. They've got these cameras now on tiny little things that'll go around. But on the end of the Superman, that was hard for us because there was no place the camera didn't go. You know, when he was flying by, it actually then went back, and you could see up. You know, there was no place to hide anything.
Yeah.
No.
Wow.
Nothing wires.
No, oh, wow.
So. Have you ever worked on like a small independent movie and just like try to foam everyone up? They should be wearing foam on this dating
Little Miss
scene.
Sunshine.
Right, exactly.
No, I don't know. Midnight Meat Train, that was probably one of the...
What is that? Is that a porn?
No, ew, oh. it's a low-budget horror movie.
Midnight Meat Train?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rabbit. Wow. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, I know.
I assume it's on Netflix. Well, thank you very
Linda,
much.
Linda, we're going to have you back to tell more stories.
Yes.
This was awesome.
And find
tell
out what other costumes
stories.
You've stolen.
Yeah. Wait, did you say ghost stories?
Goat stories.
Oh, goat stories. Yeah. Well, I do really want to get eggs soon.
Okay.
Go too. Okay. Thank you so much, Linda.
All right.
Thanks,
thank
Linda.
You.
Save big money at Menards. Keep your lawn looking its best with Menards' premium four-part fertilizer program. Each step is tailor-made for the health of your lawn. Get started this spring with a bag of crabgrass preventer with lawn food. Apply just once early in the spring to feed your lawn for over 2 months. Pick it up in our garden center today and check out Menards.com for more hot deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
There's always time for the drive-thru deal. Because no matter how fast you are at making breakfast, McDonald's is faster.
Wake up to McDonald's breakfast and mix and match a classic sausage McMuffin, delicious sausage burrito, or crispy hash browns. Get any two for just $3. Order ahead in the app and pick up curbside. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Welcome back to our studio where we have a special guest with us today, Toucan Sam from Fruit Loops. Toucan Sam, welcome.
It's my pleasure to be here. Oh, and it's Fruit Loops, just so you know.
Fruit?
Fruit.
Yeah, fruit.
No, it's Fruit Loops. The same way you say studio.
That's not how we say it.
Fruit Loops, find the loopy side.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
So this is an intervention to get you to be later for things.
I want to sound as sexy as possible.
You
do have a really good radio voice. Did you ever radio? Like
no.
In college or anything?
No. I spent college just sitting quietly being depressed in my dorm room and getting bad grades.
Oh, no.
That was your major.
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
And you're...
So you didn't have fun and you weren't a good student.
That's what
that
I always
terrible.
Say. I managed to not have fun and not get good grades. So I don't know what the heck that was all
That's
about.
A great combo.
Yeah.
And you didn't commute. You lived at school.
Yeah. I went to Cornell in upstate New York, Ithaca, New York. And I actually loved Ithaca. So I go back and visit Ithaca like almost every summer or every other summer or so. And
drive around the school.
And just, you know, I'll even walk through campus and be like, well, here's where I was so miserable. Like, now I've conquered that. Yeah. So.
The misery tour.
Yeah.
Cornell's famous for suicides.
Yep. Oh my God, really?
And they there's a bridge, I think, that goes over one of the gorges.
Maybe there's something to like the, I don't know, the alchemy of the...
It's because the weather is so grim and because their parents are, a lot of these kids are from families.
Rich.
This is a depressing topic. A lot of these kids are from families which are like pushing them, you got to get straight A's.
Driven.
Very, very, you know, or you're a failure. And plus they provide easily leapable.
Yes.
Chasms.
There's a gate you can undo. Midway across the bridge.
Yeah.
So you don't have to climb.
No, they started putting netting around everything. So that you
that's what
did
I
they really?
Heard.
Yeah.
They actually, years ago, there are all these suicides, and the school's reaction was, well, we'll raise the fence.
That's
but we're
terrible.
Not going to change anything about your experience here.
Right.
Right. And there's so many other ways to commit suicide.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you could.
We could list them.
Sure. You could take too many sleeping pills.
Yeah. That seems like a pretty straightforward way.
Right.
Yeah.
You could have someone come in and do it to you in your jail cell.
Sure. Or someone else could hire someone to do it to you.
Sure.
In your jail cell.
And it's a surprise.
While the guards pretend that they were asleep.
Right. I didn't realize I wanted to commit suicide at 5 a.m.
Oh, they just the autopsy shows that he had broken bones in his neck.
Right.
I did read that. Right? Yes. Well, that's what we've been talking about all week, should say, in the writer's room.
Okay.
Right. Has been exclusively Epstein.
I'm one of the people who thinks he was clearly murdered.
You
by
do.
Someone.
By who? By some powerful person who...
Some powerful person who doesn't want, stuff to get out of
Right. Them. Although you would think it would be hard to get in the... So then it's someone who can maneuver through a jail and get in and out of a
shapeshifter.
Yeah, exactly.
You could pay a guy to pay a guy to pay a guy.
Sure. Yeah. I always, it's keeping those things secret.
I know.
That always torpedoes conspiracy theories.
Right. How would so many people all keep
Yeah. And exactly. I never assume that humans are that good at pulling off a heist like that.
Right.
That's why it's got to be as few people as possible who are paid exorbitant sums of money.
Yeah.
You've killed someone
fear of death.
Yeah. It's fascinating, but there's...
it is. And I think it's still likely that stuff will come out if there were other people involved.
Right.
There were other... enablers of his.
That was the fastest, the lack of time between the announcement of the death and the conspiracy theories just splashing everywhere.
Oh, literally, it was like...
It was almost in the same article announcing
suicide was already death. In quotes in all the headlines.
Yes.
Well, and I love that it's actually really uniting the left and right because things have been so divisive, but everyone on both sides... wants there to be a conspiracy.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, if they can just agree the Earth is flat, that's another, that'd be another great
No, the
bridge.
Earth is on the back of a giant space turtle. We all know that. That looks like Gamera.
I don't get
Not
that
Not Mothra.
Reference. Oh.
It's just it's Godzilla.
Yeah, like a giant turtle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that shoots fire out of its feet holes.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is that could that be a new tattoo idea?
No, I'm not that into kaiju
stuff.
Yeah.
Jesse is referencing Andre's recently acquired tattoos.
Yeah.
Which are starting to pile up. How many do you have?
I have 9 tattoos now, all of which I've gotten in the last 2.5 years or so.
The dam broke.
The dam broke. I've always wanted one. And then I came up with one idea. And then I was like, as soon as I got the first one, I was like, that didn't hurt that much.
Yeah. And then you're like, it's just my skin. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
A bunch more ideas kind of flooded my brain. I have way more ideas. I'll probably get another 10 or so before I quit.
You need another body.
I do. I start carrying around people. Tattoo boy. Come over here, tattoo boy. Show off my newest tattoo.
I got another tattoo boy.
That's what rich
people do. It's the next step.
They have blood boys, tattoo boys.
What's the longest? I had no sense of, my son got one and said it took 4 hours, which I was surprised at how long it took.
Yeah, most of them only a couple hours, but the one of the panda snake thing on my left arm, that was like 3 sessions of 3 to 4
that
hours.
Yeah, that was intricate.
It's a snake.
And there's color.
Yeah.
Almost Chinese in
Japanese. The gentleman that
it's
did it.
Oh, it's Japanese. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And with a panda head.
Yeah, and it goes all the way up my arm.
Yeah.
And so he did just the head in one session and then the rest of the body in another session.
Oh, wow.
And then colored it all in the third.
After he did the session. Head, were you
Is
like,
there a name for that creature?
I call it a pandaconda.
Oh, that's what I was going to pitch to you, actually.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yeah.
it's literally from one of my comedy bits.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. That's funny.
I apologize. I haven't seen you perform that one.
It's been many years since I've done that one. Yeah, it's all right.
Well, let's talk about how long have you been doing stand-up?
Stand-up? I've been doing it for 22 years. I think the first time I ever got on stage as like a solo performer, actually 23, it's like 1996 in New York City. Yeah.
When you were sad in your dorm room at Cornell, did you ever think about doing stand-up?
No.
Or you?
I did not.
Really?
You came to that later.
Yeah, well, I started doing improv. I got into the improv troupe at school my sophomore year, I guess. And then that's what kind of gave me the, it was sort of got me addicted to being on stage and getting, laughs. Laughs and applause for, it's like, oh, suddenly there's something in this world that makes me feel good about myself. You know what I mean?
So for one fleeting moment.
Yeah, well,
and then you need more.
It takes, I always say it's about 48 hours of keeping the depression at bay if you have a good.
That's a
lot. That's pretty good. Set. I know.
A good bit on the show.
Glow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too bad. I'm not that depressive. But so, so 1996, New York City. Yeah. So 23 years of throwing myself up on stage and trying stuff out.
So when you started doing stand-up, did you keep doing improv? And did you try to do improv in New York City? Or were you just like, I'm going to do stand-up?
I did improv in New York for only about a year. Mm-hmm. With some other people that I'd gone to school with, and then everyone would just kind of fell apart. No one was that into it. So, and I realized that I just had more fun writing things and being alone on stage. Mm-hmm. I'm an only child, like Jesse here. So right. I definitely wanted all the attention to myself, and I wanted all the success or failure to be on my own shoulders, and it was much more comfortable that way.
And you wanted the adulation of adults.
Yes. Adults, ideally my parents, but that never quite happened.
Did you, you're talking about parents in Cornell, like did your parents push you for any type of particular occupation or did they just go, please don't do comedy or they
it was more
they
like,
care?
I was, I don't know. I mean, I was clearly like an artistic kid who liked to draw and sing. I was probably... with a different set, like in this day and age where how encouraging parents are towards their kids to try stuff, they would have probably sent me to art classes and theater school and all that kind of thing, which is I probably would have enjoyed.
Right.
But my dad, I mean, to put it bluntly, my dad thought creative stuff was for gay kids and women. And my dad was very old.
Get to
very,
the blunt part.
Yeah, very old school guy from a family in New York City where his dad was a police captain and it was Italian and very...
He probably would have also liked to do art classes, but wasn't allowed to.
I think you're probably right. I think he probably would have enjoyed being like a history professor or something.
Right.
But he was an engineer.
Oh.
And so he pushed me very hard towards math and science and totally unencouraging towards anything creative and encouraging towards, I was sent to like computer programming camp and shit like that I wasn't really interested in. I would have panic attacks and meltdowns and stuff. So essentially, if you want to get deep into it, that's what made me a depressed person through college and stuff until finally, when I was finally on my own in New York and could do whatever I wanted, then I just kind of turned it all on its head and finally pursued creative outlets.
And gave up computer camp.
And gave up a computer
10
camp.
Years. Did he ever relent? Like, because clearly there's a cause and effect. You're not enjoying computer camp. Or was it just like, you'll come around.
He was kind of oblivious. Oblivious. No, he would, if I was having trouble with the math classes, he would just sit with me for hours after school and pound it into my head so I get better at it. My parents came around. As soon as I started making a living doing comedy.
Oh.
So after about 10 or 12 years of doing comedy.
is how long it takes.
I know. When I started getting hired to write for TV, then it was like, well, yes, now you're a professional and very good for you. Yes, I'm very proud.
I can tell my friends.
And then once I started working for Conan, it was all they would ever tell people is that I worked for Conan.
Oh.
So they,
love that.
They became... It was conditional pride. As soon as there was something to brag about, they jumped on board the bandwagon.
Was your dad like, could you at least work the Pythagorean theorem into a sketch?
More engineer-themed comedy bits. Yeah, so here I am.
Did they ever come to the Conan show and watch anything?
Or? No, they never came to California.
Right.
My dad passed away about 2 years after I got this job. Mm. And my mom... refused to travel, and now she's got dementia and in an assisted living facility, so she's not going anywhere.
Okay.
But, yeah. So.
Well, but you started in New York, right? Or right before the show moved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I literally got hired at Conan for the last 2 months of Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Was it that late?
It was that late, yeah. Everyone was completely had... their mindset on California
yes.
and
Just packing up the office.
Packing up things. Right. No one was really like...
You just wandered in and it's like, yeah, take that office.
Yeah, exactly. No one cared. Like no one was really like invested in like showing me the ropes or anything like that. It was kind of interesting. Just kind of being a fly on the wall for a couple months.
Yeah, yeah. I would think that would be...
No one was invested in showing me the ropes either. So,
Levi and I have had that same conversation. Yeah, it takes about 3 years of working here to figure out what you're doing here. But
3 years.
That's how I felt.
Is it really interesting?
Yeah, yeah. You just kind of keep on trying until now I get it.
Right, right.
Yeah, you keep having people correcting you when you go to the wrong person for something, and they're like, no.
Right.
But that's interesting at the end of the late night because it was everyone was literally
just looking ahead to the Tonight Show. Yeah.
So you could kind of sit back and observe. You were saying,
yeah, it was like being kind of invited to this victory lap that I had not earned. You know what I mean? So it was interesting.
But that is a big leap for you then to say, okay, I'm going to go with the show to California and move.
Yeah. Well, I had already worked out in Los Angeles for a couple of summers on different stuff.
Spike Ferriston,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which was actually a good talk show.
Did Berkeley work on that with you?
Berkeley Johnson?
No, I don't think Berkeley did. No, I don't think I met Berkeley until I got here.
Okay.
Matt O'Brien.
Matt O'Brien worked on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
pretty boy.
Pretty boy. He got hired at Conan off of that show, like probably about a year before I did.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you got sort of hired off of that show too, just because you had a really great submission. But then we saw this ad you made, which
the imaginary bats.
Yes, it was a workout video. Yeah. You want to describe it?
That was basically an ad for a home gym called the Imaginary Bats Home Gym. But basically, it's a pill you take that makes you see bats that aren't there, and then the workout is you freaking out and trying
and
to fend off the bats. Yeah, you burn a lot of calories that way.
It was really funny.
That's really funny
and really well done. And it just was. It was.
Were you appearing in sketches for that show too?
Yes. Yeah, that was where that started. Yeah. So I played the guy in that video. I played a guy who owned, this is another bit I wrote that I was really, it was a hair salon called Wig Cuts, which was, they would style your hair so it looked like you were wearing a wig, even though it was just your normal hair. And the whole point was,
if you
enjoy getting into fights where someone tries to pull a wig off your head, but it's not a wig, it's your real hair and it hurts, and then you fight the guy. Well, here's the salon you go to have your hair look like it's a wig so that scenario is possible, if that makes any sense. And that was, that was like one of the first things I ever did, which was like, this is terrible looking on purpose, and which is kind of what I always do now. And also like the New York kind of, come the wig cuts.
Tony
Carmine kind of guy. Yeah.
Well, actually, you started back in late night doing acting in sketches. I remember.
Oh, yeah. Years before I worked here. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Didn't you play a samurai? I'm trying to remember some of the characters.
There was so I think it was in the new characters segment where they just parade people out. And I think it was a bit John Glazer wrote called Geisha Goombas.
That's it.
So it was two Italian mobster guys in full geisha makeup.
Right.
My line was kabook about it.
Oh, my God.
Kabook about it.
I love that it's like equal opportunity insulting to lots of groups.
It's I don't even know if you could do that today. Could you? I don't even know.
I don't know.
It's not like really saying anything bad about either group of people. But
Chris Cuomo would flip out.
Yes, he would. Yeah, he'd have a big problem with it. But yeah, so that was one of the first things I ever did. That must have been at least 5 years before I got here. And there was another one, a bit that Brian McCann wrote. I forget what the context of the bit was, where I was just a weatherman with no pants on. So I had to have the dance belt on.
All of McCann's bits involve people not wearing pants.
I didn't have any lines. I was just like, I had a suit top, but like naked from the waist down. And I was gesturing to a weather map. I don't remember what the heck the bit was.
I don't know. He was just trying to save money for a wardrobe.
I guess.
Yeah.
Or he just wanted to see what Andre had going on down there.
Yeah, you know. The dance belt doesn't really let you show off much. Keeps everything pretty much.
It's constricting.
Yeah.
Dance
belt. Not comfortable.
You feel naked.
Yeah. I try to avoid those.
Yeah.
We should, that's an old TV secret that we should let.
Yeah. Anytime you see someone who's quote unquote naked, they're actually wearing a flesh colored dance belt.
And then they pixelate it.
Yeah.
So it looks like they're naked.
Yeah. That's it. We just blew the lid off. Mm-hmm. The whole scandal.
Can tell they don't have genitals.
They even do that in porn.
Really?
No.
No. I'm so gullible. Like, really? I watch a lot of porn. I never noticed. So
it's
realistic.
All CGI.
I'm so naive.
That's so expensive.
They're all wearing dance belts, and then they CGI their genitalia.
It seems like a lot of extra steps.
I knew a guy years ago before the internet who was just like, all the penises in porn are fake. They're all. He couldn't accept that they were real.
Like they're made out of clay. Right. What are they?
He just. I think the size.
No one's got a 4-inch penis. Exactly. That's ridiculous. That's absurd. I'm smarter than
Dream
that.
Dream on, buddy.
Yeah. What is this, Jurassic Park? Give me a break.
Jurassic Park. A lot of big dicks in Jurassic Park.
Well, yeah, probably. Just don't show them.
Yeah, T-Rex, we don't know what he was working with.
Well, they were all females in Jurassic Park,
that's
right? All the dinosaurs.
Right.
But life finds a way.
Yes.
Some of them could change.
Yes, just like real lizards and... Yeah. And reptiles. A lot of them can change sex.
And they just have cloacas.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
I just like the word cloaca.
It is
Can I just Google cloaca real quick to see what that means?
Everyone should stop right now and Google cloaca.
Everybody. I think
that's
birds
what chickens have.
And reptiles.
Well, that's why they think...
Oh, I don't have a signal here.
Dinosaurs used to be actually feathered, right?
There's a cavity at the end of the digestive tract for the release of both excretory and genital products in vertebrates. Except mammals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Specifically, the cloaca is present in birds, reptiles, amphibians, most fish, and monotremes? Monotremes. Don't know what those are.
I don't know what a monotreme is. If someone knows, we could look that up.
All right, hold on while I Google.
Yeah, right. We've been wanting to bring up cloaca, but we want to wait till you were here with your voice.
My podcast will be called Googling Things with Andre.
I would listen to that.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the line. Yeah, Google monotreme. All right. Let's see what it says.
One moment, please.
It could all just be like a weird internet hole that you go down where one thing leads to another.
I go down tons of those, mostly on YouTube.
And that's where you end up on the white power
videos. And then eventually it's like, wait, no, I shouldn't be watching. What the heck is this?
I think all roads lead to white power videos.
That person looks uncomfortable. Uh-oh. Yeah.
Thank God no one's keeping track of what I search. I'm waiting for that to come out.
They're listening too. You can have a conversation about carpets and then you turn
your
phone
on. Oh, yeah, all of our phones
are an ad for carpets.
Recording this right now.
Yeah.
Now you're going to get cloaca.
Cloaca.
I don't know if they're cloaca companies, but.
Oh, yeah. We're all going to get cloaca ads on Instagram.
Come on down to Carl's Cloacas. We got cloacas of all sizes, all shapes.
Sounds like a pitch. One of us is going to submit later today.
Are you tired of dusty cloacas? I don't know.
Well, so Andre, now you perform and write a lot of sketches for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this whole stable of characters that we could list.
Yes, all of varying degrees of loudness.
And, and accent.
Accent. I don't do accents. I do almost accents. I don't know what you would call it. Slight adjustments.
They're like caricatures of an accent.
Yeah, exactly. It's like almost Spanish. That guy's almost from New York. That guy's almost Australian. But yeah, I don't know I've never quite mastered any accent, but I
can, don't forget Russian.
And Russian, yeah. And then like four varieties of New York.
Yeah.
Right.
four boroughs.
Yeah, exactly.
But never French, and yet your surname is
that's
French.
True.
My surname is French, Dubuchet, but 23
and your first
me,
name is French.
My first name is Spanish, actually.
Oh, it is.
It's Andres with an S at the end.
Oh.
But my parents never pronounced the S. They just called me Andre, so I stuck with that.
Yeah.
According to 23andMe, I'm only 3% French.
Oh, wow.
Really?
So I'm mostly Italian, Croatian, Polish, and Spanish. About 20% of each of those.
Oh, cool.
Isn't that weird?
That's a great mix.
The French last name just stuck around, so.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was just lying, I think, at Ellis Island, right? Everyone was changing where they were from.
I think a lot of people, they shorten their names on purpose and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess yeah,
yours was, might have been like Dubochnik.
It's royalty, I
Dubochnik,
think, right?
Yeah.
Dubochet.
That's what my mom always claimed. Mm, yeah. She's like, oh, you're descended from right, from French
right.
royalty.
Oh, yeah. We're supposedly now, go descended study math. From yeah. Christopher Columbus.
Right.
That's our big.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, no,
your
no
family?
One can prove that.
It's like Elizabeth yeah. Warren is you right. know, the Native American.
My family
Every family's
is like,
got a story.
We all come from scum, and you're scum.
Here, put on this eye patch.
Right.
My eye's fine. I don't need an eye patch. Put it on. Now limp. Scum.
You are scum.
Arr.
But I do. I wanted to ask because, I mean, I think it's a really particular skill to be able to write, to invent characters for yourself, and then also write, to write something for yourself. And it mm-hmm. always kills. It's always
oh,
like
it doesn't always kill.
It does.
It does.
It's all from the stand up. You know, it's all from spending years doing that on stage.
And you did so a lot of characters in your stand up.
Yeah, I never did traditional stand up. It yeah. was always like weird monologues and bits and.
They were kind of sketches.
Yeah. They were basically one person sketches. Exactly. Yeah, that's still what I do when I get up on stage. So,
but you're such a great performer that if I'm ever backstage and I actually see you looking at a script before the show, it always surprises me because I kind of feel like you just
it just comes from God.
It just comes out.
Yeah. Well, here's the key is that I don't ever try to memorize anything, and I'm always reading right off the cue cards. I mean, I'll have a general familiarity with the script,
right?
I'm always reading right off the cue cards,
yeah, that was one of the tips I got when I first was in a sketch on the show was don't
try to memorize it.
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever we have like, you know, you can tell when we have like real quote-unquote actors
right.
in bits who are, they could be very good actors, but
right.
they sometimes trip over themselves by trying to memorize the thing and then they get confused between what they think they've memorized and what's on the cue card mm-hmm. and where they're supposed to look. And I'm always like, just read off the cue card and you trust that the camera and the director are going to make the eye lines look
right.
fine.
And, lie.
Yeah. And then it's just then it's just a matter of like how natural can you read?
Right.
And so I happen to be good at, I guess, to make it seem organic or whatever. But I'm just reading off of a card.
That's yeah, isn't that cool? That's interesting.
So
it's yeah, true. It's memorizing comforting. There I know people who've gone up, as they say,
oh, yeah,
who
we've
screwed
had
up their stuff because they try to memorize
yeah.
it.
Yes. There's a famous not famous, but among my friends. You remember Eric Drysdale?
Oh, no.
Yeah, is this what you were thinking of?
Yeah.
He's a really funny
He's
written on a ton of shows, so he went on to have a great career. But he was in a sketch, and he I guess he didn't want to wear his glasses for the sketch or something like that.
So it was the Costas Heads, which yeah. was a parody of Deadheads.
Okay.
And they were guys they were a group of guys who dress and talk like Bob Costas and follow. And so they're in the audience.
Oh, they're like Bob Costas.
When Costas
super
was
fans.
On the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they would come out and do a sketch to Conan and Bob Costas while on the couch. It was a great sketch.
Yeah.
And whose sketch was it? I don't remember.
He couldn't read the cue cards because he took his glasses off.
Oh,
and didn't he,
no.
And I guess he thought he had it memorized. And then in the middle of the sketch, he just said, ah, shit. Or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that was
oh,
yeah.
no.
So we had to kind of, I mean, you know, which was fine because we were pre-taping the show.
Right.
But it was, yeah. Everyone
and the way
was
things work
shocked.
On our show, it's like, that's it. It's gone. There's no, wait, can we just get him some glasses and start over? Nope.
Yeah.
You know, everything gets one shot.
It's, it is.
Time is of the essence.
It's like you make a mistake. All right.
Yep.
Well.
Next.
The punishment is it's cut.
Yep.
That does remind me, I got into a similar scenario where I wrote a sketch for Steve Agee, and one of the premises of the sketch was that he had just gotten LASIK surgery. But then it turned out that he needs glasses to read the cue cards. So it was like,
oh, yeah.
It's so, literally written in that you can't be wearing glasses.
Right.
And he had showed up and didn't have his contacts, and it was just like, what are we going to do?
Did he memorize it? And
they
did
made
it
the words really big.
Okay.
And so it was like one, you know, like
one word,
two words
card.
Per card.
What a pain for the cue card guys.
Yeah.
That's great.
But it was like, of course, why did I write?
I have a vague recollection of a squinting
that.
Steve Agee in a bit.
Yeah.
Was that it? That must have been it.
It was, probably was.
He's like grimacing
and
squinting
and look
as hard
that
as he can.
To try to, yeah. And he's pausing after every word while they flip the card.
Hello, Conan. I'm here too. Love that guy, Steve Hazy. We mentioned he's really funny guys.
Yes,
yeah, Hazy. We've had so much good talent on our show.
We did.
Oh my goodness, yeah, and like just even the people who've come through here as interns and pages, yeah, and they're like famous. It's crazy.
Everything we touch turns to gold. How do you like to generate ideas? Is that something that you have like a practice with? Or
no, I wish I had like a system.
Yeah,
I don't really. I mean,
you take a notebook everywhere.
Yes, actually, have.
You have
one in my back pocket right now.
I know here that you fill up notebooks.
Yes, I call
quickly.
Them my hilarologs, and they're full of 99% nonsense that doesn't get used for anything. But I just try to think of stuff. I don't know. Sometimes it's as simple as like, I'd really like to talk with an Australian accent. What could I?
Uh-huh.
What could I?
Really?
Yeah, oh, I like starting with the accent.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the whole Francisco guy. The guy who's like the leader of Bolivaguay or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
I just like that accent. I was like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Where's he from? And then just make up a bunch of crap to support why I'm talking that way.
That's bowels. A great character.
Bowels.
Was bowels the word
cheese
that you...
Cheese bowels. No, I don't know what the initial... I used to do that character on stage years ago. He wasn't the leader of Bolivaguay. He was just an entertainer from that country.
He hadn't, the coup hadn't happened yet.
Yes, exactly. And I just always felt more comfortable talking in accents on stage than my own voice.
So. Are there accents you haven't done yet that you want to do on the show?
Ooh, that's a good question. Scottish might be fun.
Ooh, a kilt.
I'm not going to attempt
Let's
it right
get
now.
The kilt ready.
Oh, yeah. Get the kilt and the dance belt ready. Oh, I don't know. You can't do, yeah, I couldn't do any Eastern accents because that would be not cool.
Eastern Europe?
No, Eastern, Asian.
Oh.
That would not be, first of all, it wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
But you could do any of the things that acceptable. You could do Spanish, Croatian,
oh, sure.
Polish.
Yeah, what does a Croatian person sound like?
I don't even know.
Polish, I think I would just sound like a Russian, right? I don't know how Polish people sound either. Well, anyway, good stuff to research.
But you,
here's the Pole with a cloaca, Andre Dubiche.
Speaking of your characters, you just came up with an idea for a sitcom.
Oh yeah, basically, I wrote this pilot that I showed to Conoco. They're like, sure, let's pitch it. Which is all the guys I play on the show are roommates. And they each have two jobs. Like, for example, Carmine D'Annunzio, the super Italian guy.
Right.
Like, or New York. He's not even Italian. It's like an exaggerated.
He's like Sbarro Italian.
Yeah.
He's Travolta Italian.
It's like Travolta times 100.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Like, he is, he runs a pornographic magazine store and he moonlights as a captain of a starship. And
high and low standards.
All of his dialogue is subtitled, even though he's speaking in English because he's so hard to understand.
So they live in Brooklyn.
They live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So it's Carmine.
But all his neighborhood guys are still like New York mobsters, even though it's LA.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Welcome back to Los Angeles, right here where you grew up. It's him, and then there's.
It's Bolivaguay.
It's the Francisco guy from Bolivaguay, and he is the host of a game show called "So You Think You're Arm Wrestling a Celebrity." And also has a side business where he does like dreamscaping, like Inception stuff.
Oh,
great!
And then, like a super low budget version of that.
It's good work if you can get it.
And then there's the Wahlburgers guy, basically the medieval warrior dude, Leslie. Right.
Leslie, yeah.
Who was a game of, you think he's on the show to promote Game of Thrones?
Yes, but he
loves
a
fan of
Wahlburgers. Yep.
And, so,
and those three guys are all roommates. And then the Russian guy is their landlord. And the Australian guy is their neighbor. And they all have – basically, it's going to be like – well, if it ever gets made, it's like if I played everybody on Seinfeld or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Kind of, those kind of storylines. So,
and so how – and it's just that you have to – I mean, you have to plan out every shot so that
– Yeah, well, not in the apartment they live in. The landlord tells them that the apartment has really bad eye lines.
Okay. right.
Yeah. Eye lines in this apartment very bad. And so whenever they're in the apartment, it never looks like they're looking at each other.
The person they're talking to.
Well, that'll save time as well.
Save time.
So, the scenes in the apartment will be easy. And then anywhere else they go, though, we have to make it. We got to find a big husky guy with a blockhead to play me from behind.
Yeah, you might need a double.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm guessing there are no women to be found in this sitcom.
Well, I mean, all
play Elaine.
I'm not going to get in drag, I don't think. Nah. But no, there'll be female characters and stuff. But you know,
and you made up
if I'm playing everybody,
it could be one woman that plays all the women.
Actress. That's not a bad idea. That'd be funny.
Someone who does a lot of voices.
Yeah, or at least two voices.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. And you did a pitch for this, and it just went up online.
Yeah.
So people can check it out.
It was a little pitch video that I made with the intent of just showing it to people at pitch meetings. But I guess the show was like, let's throw it online and see what people think. So
Why not?
Why not? Give a little something
drum
to the fans.
Some buzz. Yeah.
Drum up some interest.
Yeah. It's, so maybe that'll help. I don't know.
That's very typical now that if you're taking a show, if you're pitching a sitcom, it's not just the idea. You have a piece of video you have a pilot presentation to go with it. That's.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't even have to show up.
Expected.
I would just watch the video. Let me know if it's a yay or a nay.
Check this out and send a check.
Exactly.
So
is Butterscotch going to be on? A character you play.
He's clown. The evil clown.
Yeah.
First of all, Todd Lemon created the character of Butterscotch.
Mm. Oh, and he won't give you the rights to it.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to sue him for the IP. No, I really just hate wearing makeup, so I don't think I would put myself through that much.
Plus you'd have to shave.
Makeup. Plus I'd have to shave.
Right.
I don't like your beard.
I also don't like shaving, so.
You'd have to pull Cesar Romero.
This beard is just from Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. It grows fast.
You grow a fast beard.
Yeah, it takes about 2 weeks, and then boom.
You're the most masculine.
I know.
Man
he's the most
staff.
Testosterone. Oh, yeah.
No, I think there's plenty of good, a lot of testosterone flying around here. Come on.
Name one.
I don't know. Todd Levin's got a nice, robust mustache.
That's true.
Will does.
Levi also has a gray beard. You've got a gorgeous gray beard right there.
I could grow a pretty good beard, to be honest, if I didn't.
You don't want to show up the guys. Yes. I know your game. You're always rope-a-doping us.
You've got a career in the carnivals after this, if you want.
Well, Andre, thank you so much.
Thank you for
having
me.
Thank you. This is a pleasure.
And,
thanks for traveling down from the third
from
floor
upstairs.
Down here.
Thank you. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
And I think we got you out of a pitch meeting, which we always say is the real purpose.
I'm sure they haven't
even
started the meeting yet. They're waiting for us.
Oh, maybe they are.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Andre.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Kevin Bartelt.
Engineered by Will Becton.
Mixed by Ryan Connor.
Supervising producer is Aaron Blair.
Associate producer, Jen Samples. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross. Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
Ta-da!
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.